You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here's your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. Each year in the lead up to ARIC, we are lucky enough to take an advanced look at who is on the speaker list, and one of the agent speakers on the program generally ends up on our cover. Last year, it was the lovely Melita Bell. This year, when we looked at the list, one name stood out, and that's Megan Jaffe from Ray White Remuera, a beautiful suburb in Auckland, New Zealand. From her career beginnings as a nurse to going back to business school, where she herself admits she was worried about being outed for not being smart enough, Megan's business is now number one in the Ray White Group in Australasia, ahead of some of the big powerhouse offices in Australia. Megan will tell you she believes it's due to her focus on people, the culture, and their environment. As part of my research for this interview for our cover story for Elite Agent, I was privileged to spend quality time with Megan in New Zealand, where she gave me her views on positionship versus real leadership, what makes her culture great, how like attracts like, and why she feels as though even now she never wants to stop learning. If you're a leader or aspiring to be a leader of people, you'll see why in this interview people from all over the world make the pilgrimage to Remuera to experience the magic of Megan Jaffe and her team. I hope you enjoy this special extended interview with one of the industry's most humble and respected leaders. Megan, what was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job after leaving school, I was a registered nurse. So I left school at 16 and I became a registered nurse. Both my sisters were registered nurses, as were my mum. And so I just followed the natural pathway. And it was an absolute honour being a registered nurse. What it taught me was the privilege of working with people on a very private level. So at a young age, I worked with people who were often dying. I worked the night duties. And firstly, I learnt extremely good communication skills and working with people who were unwell and at their end stages. But the real learning that I got was what they wanted to share in their final moments or final days of their lives. And so I learned an incredibly valuable and fundamental lesson from the age of 17 to 21. Most people who were telling me their stories through the night, what they wanted to say was they wished they had been more true to themselves. They wished they'd lived a life which was a life they chose, as opposed to a life of pleasing others or fulfilling others' desires for them. And, you know, that was a very big message that I came away from that experience, and it stayed with me throughout my entire life.
And I imagine that learning those lessons very early on are things that you've taken with you into real estate, because often we see the same things in real estate, right? People may not be at the best part of their lives, and you're able to draw on that now when you're dealing with people who are going through a divorce or a separation or something like that.
Well, I went into nursing because I wanted to help people. I came into real estate also because I wanted to help people. I had an experience as a vendor which wasn't necessarily good, and it was a highly emotional time for me as I was going through the journey of selling my property. So the ability to help people, you have the most wonderful opportunity to be a part of people's private lives as they're transitioning from one chapter to the next. And that the reasons, it doesn't matter if it's a good reason or for a reason which is a sad reason, it's a highly emotional time for people. So the way that you communicate, the way that you support, the way that you are their trusted advisor, it just can give them an experience which is a very good experience, as opposed to being what I do see quite regularly, unfortunately, as being traumatic and transactional. So yes, very, very valuable skills to have.
So in your website bio, you've listened to a lot of people's stories and guided them on their real estate journeys. Tell us a bit about how you got from nursing into real estate. What sort of path have you traveled to get where you are today as mentor to many and leading an amazing business like Ray White Remuera?
So if I talk about when I was nursing and the reason why I chose to move on, within the nursing hierarchy, there were a lot of politics. And because I'm a person that I do say what I believe, I didn't enjoy the politics of that environment. And so I had to be true to myself and say what it is that I thought. And so that doesn't necessarily fit with the hierarchical structure of nursing or one of those traditional models. So I stepped away from that, even though I loved what it was that I was doing. And I moved out very briefly into drug repping. And when I was a drug rep, and I just did that for a year, it was a natural transition because I knew a lot of doctors and I had a good understanding of the industry. But what the drug companies wanted me to say was not necessarily truthful. And it was about making sales as opposed to doing what was right. And because I couldn't say things that I didn't truly believe, that wasn't the role for me. So from there, I stepped away quite quickly. And I had met a lot of doctors throughout that process as being a drug rep. And I'm married to a heart specialist. And he was unable to get a job full time in the public sector as a cardiologist. And because I had a lot of contacts with doctors, I suggested to him, perhaps we pursue building a service in the private sector. So I took him to meet a lot of the doctors that I knew. And we ended up starting off a cardiology practice together. And I worked with him as his business manager for 15 years, building that business to being the biggest private sector cardiology practice in New Zealand. So that was my background after leaving nursing, was just falling into business, but it was a business of customer service wrapped around medicine and healthcare. So it was really lovely.
And how did you go from there, from working with your husband, into real estate?
Well, the honest truth is wherever I went, everyone said, you're Dr. Jaffe's wife. And I felt that it was time for me to be known as Megan Jaffe as opposed to Dr. Jaffe's wife. And so there was just a point where I got some experience and I enjoyed the experience of business. So it was time to take a look at where the opportunities were for me to build a business and to basically build my own brand. And I had been selling properties throughout our time in business, our residential properties, and I was always interested in property and the whole process around it. So I had moved away from Warwick's practice and I had decided to do some business studies. I went and I did a diploma of management. When I went to do that diploma, I knew that I would be outed because people would find out that I was stupid and that I shouldn't be in business because I didn't have a background in business. I was so driven around the learning that I was getting, I ended up getting straight A's for my diploma. And the professors asked me if I'd consider doing an MBA. So I went on and I did an MBA, not because I wanted to do the MBA, but because I was absolutely rapt that people thought that I was intelligent enough to do one. And that's actually what drove me into that program. And I'm terribly grateful that I did do the Master of Business Administration because it taught me some strategic frameworks and a comprehensive and logical approach to look at business, be it in the medical sector or any field at all. So those learnings have underpinned how I've evolved this business of customer service that we've created today.
Your approach to customer service is quite legendary, and we'll come to that in a second. So I know you're an early bird like me. You get up at 4 a.m. What does the first hour of your day look like?
So 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, I get up at 4. I've done that for 16 years now because when I was doing that MBA, I was working full time and I had two preschoolers. So the only time to do my assignments was early in the morning. So it's a discipline that I taught myself and I didn't want to lose it because it's actually an exceptionally peaceful time of the day. And some people are early birds, some people are night owls. And it turns out I was an early bird and the peace and tranquility at that time of the morning to go through the routine and the daily rituals that I have that help me stay centered and focused for the day ahead. So I start off at 4. The first thing I do is connect with nature. And so it sounds silly, but I go outside and it doesn't matter if it's raining, but I sit outside and I just listen to whatever's going on in the natural environment and I get myself connected to nature. I meditate every morning. And then after I've got myself in that space, I then start my reflections, and my reflections always come in around, for me, some spiritual learning to keep myself as a whole person. And then I move on and I start looking at some form of leadership related learning to help me just keep topped up or to remind me of the things that matter to me as I'm going into my working day. So after I've filled myself up with some things which are really positive for me, I then go on and I reflect on the day before. I look at what I've done in a day. Often it's very hard to unpack unpack because our days are so busy, but I do unpack it because I want to see what I'm grateful for, what my learnings were, what I could have done better. And I don't take baggage from the day before into the day ahead, but I will take learning through, and I will also take anything that I haven't finished off and put it onto the agenda for the day ahead. So it's not a 1 hour ritual for me. It goes across a couple of hours, and then there's exercise in there as well. So I love swimming. I don't swim every day, but I do swim at least 4 days a week. But it's so invigorating getting your body completely energized with that routine and that discipline, which I couldn't live without now, because boy, oh boy, does it put me into a bubble which takes me through the day. And that bubble never lasts all day, but I've got things that I do during the day to energize myself and keep myself centered, because I'm very much the role model for how it's going to be for the day for the entire organization. So my headspace is absolutely critical, because everyone inside the company gets their lead. They get the vibe from me, and that's there for me. But I also teach every person inside the company that if they can get themselves in that headspace, everyone's taking the vibe from them as well. So the vibe inside the office is usually pretty jolly good, because the majority of people have done the work on themselves to be in a good headspace when they come into the workplace.
You can definitely feel that in your office. I mean, I've been to your office and it is an amazing vibe when you walk in there. So just for the listeners, or for the people that might be listening into this that are not familiar with your business in New Zealand, just give us a little bit of background, how many people work in that business, a bit about the area that you serve in Auckland.
So Rewaitemi is a central Auckland suburb. It has annual sales of $1.2 billion. It's the biggest market in New Zealand. There are around 9,000 homes in Remuera. It's very desirable because it's where the schools are, where a lot of people aspire to educate their children, both public and private. It's also geographically convenient to the city and to a lot of our eastern beach suburbs. So it's a really popular spot. It's the most competitive market in New Zealand, being the highest revenue earning suburb. So there's lots of sales people aspiring to take their share of the market. Within our company at Rewaitemi Wera, we've got 51 salespeople in the team, and within the 51, we have 11 teams running at the moment. So it's a very collaborative approach that we take with what it is that we're building inside the company and supporting those 51 salespeople. We've got another 22 administrators. And for me, a salesperson and an administrator are equally important. It's like Steve Jobs with the front of the picket fence and the back of the picket fence. We need each other to deliver the world-class service that we're aspiring to deliver. So we have got these wonderful administrators supporting the superb salespeople that are building their businesses within my business.
It's amazing. And people do come to visit your office. I've seen it from all different groups, from different countries, from Australia and all over the place. What do you think that they're most interested in about your business, or what do you think that they're most impressed by when they get there?
It feels like a bit of a pilgrimage that comes from across Australasia, and there's people coming from the States now too, which is really neat. So it's a great honour for us to have people approach us. And, you know, I have the attitude, which is I'm really grateful when people approach and say, hey, we've heard about your office, we've heard some things, we'd love to come and take a look. And for me, it's not about the brand, which I choose to hold my business. Leadership goes across brands. And if people are really interested in finding out how to do things better to better serve their customers, being the salespeople and their clients, then I'm really open to them coming and taking a look. Because what I know is that for people to take the journey, it's a major investment for them to come. There's airfare, etc. And so the people that do come are really wanting to learn some things that will help improve their businesses. It is quite a pilgrimage because they have to take time out of their businesses and then invest to come and be with us. The reasons they tell me that they come, they've heard about it from somebody else, because that community is pretty strong. Everybody's wanting to do better for their people. And when they come inside the building, the things I most commonly hear about is the energy and the vibe that's within the building. It is the people that create that energy and that vibe. And the reason why this company is so wonderful is it's got a great culture, and the culture is created by the people who are inside this business. And so it isn't me, it's us. And the neat thing is, if I'm not here, it's still the same. So people always talk about the vibe and the energy in the business that it's quite pervasive. They come to see the teams working within the team's environment, their natural habitats, where they're building their teams within the overall team inside the company. They're looking at the way that people work together. And so looking at the leader within our salesperson's team, how they're operating, how they're building the structures, the systems, the roles and responsibilities within each individual business unit, because they're all different. The overall structure is the same, but the way the team's level of ambition is set and then how they want to evolve it out for the customer base they serve, it's all slightly different. So people traveling and visiting, they can actually go inside those businesses because the salespeople are really open. And what we find happens is because the people that come here, they're people of like mind. So we end up just swapping ideas and we've made these neat friends, which is becoming a global community. We're sharing ideas and it goes on after people have gone. We've just had an upgraded business plan sent through from somebody in Australasia. They took our business plan and evolved it, and it's even better now. So that sort of thing, that IP swapping and sharing, that's something which makes our whole industry enhance and move towards being more of a profession. And we love that.
Culture has to come from somewhere. That shared set of beliefs that this is what we do and how we do it has to come from somewhere. How do you think that culture has been created along the way? What are the shared beliefs in your office that you feel make that vibe or contribute to that vibe?
Oh, culture, very simply put for me, it's the way we do things around here, and it's both overt and it's inherent and it builds over time. So I have an extremely clear vision for the company, and that is to be the agency of choice, working with the like-minded salespeople to deliver service excellence to their customers and clients to the best of our ability, and that's right across our community. So having that clear vision and then having clear values as a company, and our company values are so simple, which to have the client interest at heart first and foremost, to deliver service excellence to every person who comes into our realm, to expect leadership from every person inside the company. We have so much innovation that's going on inside the company. One of our values has actually become adaptation, and it's our ability to adapt to change because there is so much innovation that's coming through. Those are basic fundamentals, but the other key for us is collaboration, and it's true collaboration where we work together for the greater good of our clients, because some of us is much greater than one of us. So with the vision, with the values being very clear, our team now are talking to people of like mind, and like attracts like. So it's just become really easy that people tell their stories of what it's like inside the company, and people of like mind approach me about, I would love to have a look at my business could fit within your business if I could be a salesperson with you. Most of the people that join come from another salesperson or from a conversation with a salesperson who's already working inside the office. The culture is evolutionary, but it is really fixed around those key values and like-minded people upholding those values both in the workplace and in private as well, because there is no difference. We're always on duty in our roles as salespeople and as business owners.
Yeah, that's very, very true. The interesting thing I noticed about your office when I was there is it is a special building in the local area. And I did notice that there were always a lot of locals milling around. So tell us a bit of the story of the office and what's special to you about it. Throw in a bit of history of the building.
So I've been the business owner of Ray White Remuera for 10 years now, and I started the business off in a small office at the other end of the block in which our new building is. And so it was a very old building, and it was designed for retail. It wasn't designed for residential real estate, for sure. But I always created the environment so it was open and transparent for anyone who was going past. It had lovely art, and that wasn't expected in a real estate office. And so we found with the village of Remuera in which we serve, there's loads of people walking past. They just found it to be an attractive looking place, even though it was a grotty old building that was welcoming. So they would come in, and once they came inside, they would find nice people who were helpful. So just the people coming and going into that building, we created a lot of business from that environment. So over time, we actually outgrew that building, and we evolved our teams across five different offices in Remuera at the peak point. So we had five offices running our whole broader team, and we would all squash together. together once a week into one physical building. So we basically outgrew everything that we had. But the nice thing is that in those buildings, which were not particularly nice, the people worked so beautifully together that we just grew and we grew. So once we'd gathered all the people that fitted who we are today, I felt so good about everybody that I decided to make the investment to build the physical building that would house us as our home and bring everybody home. So I kept my eye on spots for a long, long time. And there was one particularly pretty old building, which was built in the 1920s. Very, very pretty. Look, long and the short of it, I bought that building, paid far too much for it, and I kept what was best of it, which was only one brick wall and one set of LED lights in the shop window. And we replicated the look of the building. It was 200 square meters. It was old and run down, but we created 600 square meters of concrete purpose-built building with technology inside for how we need to serve our clients, but also the physical layout to house our teams and to house the culture of auction and auction excellence that we run inside this business. You know, you've been into this building yourself. It is purpose-built to serve the needs of the buyers and sellers and the salespeople and their teams. And we built it a year ago. We've been in here thrashing it for a year, and there isn't one piece that I would want to change because it's working beautifully for how we deliver the service we do to our customers.
Yeah, I particularly like the rooms that you've got for vendors to watch their auction in privacy so they can actually see the auction going on, but they've got their own little space so they don't have to feel self-conscious or anything like that while the whole process is going on in the main room. How did you come up with that idea? Is that something that you've seen before?
It was very easy for me. I sat down and over 3 days I just drew what it would look like on every single one of the three levels. And it's because we've had the ill-designed buildings and I knew everything I didn't like about what it is that we were doing for the buyers and the sellers when they were in our rooms and for the salespeople most definitely. So I had such clarity about what it was that we needed. So the spaces for the vendors, their position so that vendors have got some real privacy at the time where they're feeling vulnerable, which is what's going to happen. They can see everything that's happening. They can hear everything that's happening, but they've got some privacy, but also they're hyper aware when they're going through that phase of their property being in that auction phase. You can hear everything. You know, having been a vendor myself at auction, listening to the background noise of what the market, the buyers are saying, or what some salespeople may be saying in casual conversation, they are acutely aware of what's being said. So we wanted to give them a space where it was perfect for them to focus on being guided by their salesperson, the auctioneer and the team for that stressful piece of their journey, but over with the buyers as well, having an environment for the buyers where there was enough pressure on them to act, but also enough privacy and giving them all the dignity they needed for decision making. A lot of thought went into those rooms to allow not only for them, but to accommodate for the families and the groups of families that come through, you know, if they have trustees or other parties involved. So we've got room to open walls up for big families. We've got all kinds of flexi in the building, and we've even got in the upstairs levels private places if you've got specific requirements. And having a lift, it's great if we've got oldies in the room because they can just be as comfy as they like wherever we choose to have them within the building, depending on their needs.
It's a fantastic space and very fitting of the history of the building and the local community. So, you know, I think it's a wonderful place, and I'd love to come back and visit you again one day.
You're welcome anytime. And, you know, the great thing about the building is that we have the hours in which we use it, but it's very much a gift to the community to enjoy. It's very beautiful to look at. So wherever I go every day, people are saying thank you for making Remuera pretty. But when we're not using the building, it's open to many community groups. We run networking groups, the local Rotary. We sponsor a lot of charities, so it's open to those groups. And we like it to be full morning and evening and on the weekends too. So we have lots and lots of groups that use it when we're not using it, and it means that the building is alive all the time and it's for the benefit of the community as well. And so that's worked out really nicely. And of course, the byproduct is that they're grateful and opportunities come. It's not the reason why we do it, but it is very much a community campus for all of our community to enjoy if they have an appreciation of what it is that we've put in place and invested into the community.
Yeah, absolutely. So all these little things, these pieces of service excellence and the amazing team that you've built and all of those factors have brought you to the enviable number one position in the Ray White network in Australasia. How does it feel when some of the other big offices like Double Bay in New South Wales and Nufarm in Queensland, they challenge you openly for your top spot?
I think it's awesome. You know, I think it's a privilege to achieve what it is that we have, and especially for 3 years in a row. I'm very focused with our business on service excellence, but it's also about endurance. It's building a company that endures way past the business owner. So their goals are neat, and my goals were those, which can I possibly do it? Can we possibly do it? And yes, we can, because with great culture and good strategy and good focus, you can achieve whatever it is you want to. So I've got no doubt those guys will achieve the number one spot. And because they're thoroughbreds, they're wonderful people leading great teams, all it does is raise the bar. It raises the bar for the whole industry, for all of us inside Ray White to get better. So it's very much running with the thoroughbreds. And for me, it's not about being number one. It's about being our best. And if a byproduct is that you become number one, well, that's really cool. But it's just a mark point along the way. So we're all ambitious. We're very ambitious, but I'm ambitious for our people. And it's not just what we do financially, it's how we do it, and it's why we're doing it too. So they're just marker points. And the great thing is that most certainly we would like to maintain that spot as number one. But if someone's going past us, it means that a high tide floats all boats. It means everybody's going up, and that's awesome.
Look, I definitely think that from what I saw with the guys who came over for your growth day, everybody just shared everyone's experiences. And it's very clear that your approach to growth is I'm going to grow and I want everyone else to grow. And that was really lovely to see. And I think what makes it an amazing hallmark of your leadership in any case. So let's move on now to leadership in the industry in general, because I know you've got some strong views on this as well. They've done some studies out here in Australia that say that good business leadership is akin to business success. So how do you view leadership in general in the industry, and what do you think could be done to improve?
Well, as you know, I'm very honest as a person. So I came into the industry, which I very much saw as a trade and not a profession, because I could see that there was an opportunity just to help people and to give them a better level of service. And obviously the market likes that, because we now sell 800 million a year on homes in our market. And so that's a lot of homes to sell for buyers and sellers. So they certainly wanted it. And when it comes to leadership, I think there is enormous lack of leadership inside our industry. It's rare. I believe it's a 95-5 world. And only 5% of people are really interested in mastering their craft. And within our industry, I see a lot of people focused on profit. I see a lot of people focused on self-interest. I see a lot of people who are focused on matters related to ego, but not necessarily focused on absolutely doing what's right for their people and helping the growth for their people over a long period of time. I completely understand that we need to make profit. I totally understand our responsibilities as business owners. But when a person joins my company, I'm there for their growth within the company's growth, and the byproduct that comes is the profit piece. So when it comes to leadership, people who are worth following, and they're worth following over a period of time, and we do see some marvelous leaders across our industry, across Australasia, and that 5%, I've made it my business to get to know them. And that's actually the community where we're visiting one another and we're building. The rest, I call it positionship. So they hold an authority piece within their business. They either are the business owner or they have ownership and they've been there for a long time. So they have an authority position. And I call that positionship as opposed to leadership. I picked that concept up when I was at the Inman conference in New York just a couple of months ago. And it really does reflect a lot of what we see at the helm of not only business ownership as principals within offices, also at some of the levels of CEOs that I see who I find to be deeply disappointing, because they are very focused on profit. They're very focused on short-termism and not looking at the endurance and the long-term for the organization in which they serve. So there's massive opportunity for leadership. And the great thing is that there are so many younger people who are joining our industry who have chosen it as a career as opposed to making a fast buck. And some of those people have got the qualities within them to take our fledgling profession to the next level. And it's in those people that I would like to invest my time. If I have anything to give into those people, it's the next generation of leaders coming through, receiving the support of the good leaders who exist within our industry and helping them to flourish and move our industry forward and forward towards the profession that it is becoming.
you're very much of the view that leadership is about other people and not about yourself. You would have seen Simon Sinek at Inman, who wrote the book Leaders Eat Last. Should we be looking to leaders to be more of that ilk, particularly with the younger generation coming through, that it is more about them than it is about the leader?
Oh, Simon's one of my heroes and he's helped me a lot. So I've read all his books and I watched all his podcasts and I watched them again. And he was very interesting at Inman because he just sold his home and he had a terrible experience from the salesperson that sold the property. So he certainly shared that on stage. But with his concept of leaders eating last, it's about putting our people first. It's also about creating a safe environment in which for them to flourish. So I am of the school of Simon Sinek. I'm also of the school and I'm very grateful to some of these people I haven't actually met. I have met Simon, Jim Collins with Good to Great in his Level 5 leadership, where it's our role to be creating the genius makers and not be the genius. So some of those frameworks have really, really helped me to work to build we achieving as opposed to I achieving on behalf of the company. So the answer to your question is yes, around Simon, most definitely.
So you are a mentor to many. Do you have a mentor or someone that inspires you?
I have several mentors and mentors change over time. And all mentors, all coaches, all skill-based trainers are all human. So as we evolve, and you would expect us to evolve, so our mentors will evolve too. And so I have relationships with people and I have formal mentors who I pay. And those mentors, it should be that I outgrow the mentors or otherwise I don't believe they're being effective in their role. Same with coaches. Good coach, you'll outgrow a coach. But it may be that as you change and evolve, you come back to them. And so we have different things that we need as we're growing. So I have several mentors and they evolve as we evolve. So we are evolutionary as people. So it does change. I have mentors I haven't met. I read every single day. Tim Ferriss, Jim Collins, certainly Wayne Dyer, and some of those greats are mentors to me, and I haven't met them all, but I've met some of them. They fill my mind with the things I need to put in them. My physical mentors that I have, I've got a couple of really good mentors up in the States that I work with, and I like working with them in the States, and they've been with me for 5 years, and I like it because they're far away. They're not in my circle, so I can be completely honest with how it is that I'm feeling, with what it is that I'm getting them to help me with, because that's just a safe place for me. And I've created a safe place for everybody else. So I've got a little spot for me, which is with people up in the States. The great thing about mentors is a good mentor is that there's no judgment. They listen more than they speak, really, and they help facilitate you often coming to your own answer versus giving you their answer, because the role of a good mentor is to give support and not to fix, I believe. And my role with the people that come my way is really it's just to give them support and be a sounding board, because they often know the answers, but they just can't see it because they're too down in their own minds with what they do. The mentors that I have are young and old. So some of the salespeople inside this company are mentors to me, because in their early 20s, they're actually more together than I am on some days, but certainly than I was at their age. There's some 20-year-olds who've done so much work on themselves. They're just amazing, beautiful, beautiful human beings. And I wish I was like that when I was their age, but I didn't have the role models around me on the way through. I also didn't have access to the information because, you know, they're so lucky now with Google. You've got access to so much information and so many great mentors as well. So some of the people that see themselves as students are actually my teachers within the environment in the community in which I live.
You can definitely be inspired by everyone around you. They don't have to necessarily be a coach or a mentor if you look for the good out there.
Well, the role of a leader is really to inspire and energize, because we can't make anyone do anything. They've got to motivate themselves. So leaders, mentors, they are people who inspire. And I get inspiration from loads of different people on different days inside the business, but also the broader community that we're part of. And it's wonderful. I get phone calls every day from different people where they're having an up or they're having a down. So we just do swapsies with how we support each other. And it's just a lovely community of support that's being built. So, you know, as people are out and about, you don't need to spend or invest any money. There's great people around you who, if you pick the phone up, they will help you. And if they don't want to help you, then hey, they're not the right person to be your mentor. But there's so many people that are there for you if you're brave enough to ask. And just be brave. That would be my advice. Anyone who emails me or Facebook messages me, I always ring them up So I will always reply to anybody. It may be that I can't help them and I have to put them in another direction, but I'm so honoured that someone would even consider asking me because I don't know everything. I'm just giving it a go.
I totally get that. And I totally get why people would want to come to you for advice as well. But speaking of advice, a lot of people give advice out in the real estate industry. What is the worst advice you've heard given to someone starting their career in real estate?
Well, this one's a cliche, but come in because you'll make a lot of money fast.
Yeah.
Because the reason you come in is to build your career serving people and providing an experience that as they're going transitioning from A to B, you're there to be their trusted advisor and give them the support. And if you do that really well and you build relationships, a byproduct is that you can do well financially, but it shouldn't be the goal. So anyone who's saying, come into my organization and I'll help you make money fast, they're causing a disservice to our profession. And they're people that over time, I don't see them endure. And I'm pretty focused on helping out from the industry too, because it's the wrong reason to come into this profession.
For sure. What do you wish you had known 10 years ago when you started in real estate? So what have you learned along the way that you would do more quickly if you were given your time over again?
Ask for help. That's the first thing. Ask good people. And the great thing is with technology, there's so many people there. We're blatted with people every day through all the podcasts and everything about all these wonderful people doing wonderful things. Just reach out to them. So I would ask people because they're not necessarily inside the organizations where people are currently working, but there's some super people out there and I contact them all the time because I've got loads of heroes that I've just met through watching podcasts or listening to podcasts and all those things are free. I have learned that I don't need to know the answer to everything. I need to ask more questions. I also have learned to reach out and ask for help. People, if you ask for help and you're not too guarded up, they want to help, but also they often know the answers. And because you're in a position of authority, perhaps, they don't say what it is that they're thinking and they can be a very big part of the solution. So for me, as soon as I learned to stop thinking that I needed to know everything and I started to ask people for their help, boy, did we blossom and start to take off, because that's when we started to be inclusive, to collaborate, and we started to build the really nice culture of sharing that we enjoy today. And the reason I didn't ask the questions, I was fearful. I thought that I needed to know the answers to everything. So I admit now a lot more about how I feel as I'm going through. I allow myself to be very honest about what's going on inside my head, because if I'm honest about what's going inside my head, it shows people that it's okay for them to be honest about what's going on inside their minds as well. And as long as they're in a safe environment where they're not going to be mocked, and certainly that doesn't happen in the environment that we've got here, and if, say, something did happen that wasn't right, the company kind of steps in, people within the company, to tidy that up. So being truthful. And I think one thing is that lots and lots of people look at others who are further down their journey, say 10 years, 5 years, and it's comparing yourself for where you're at today against yourself, not against someone who's been doing it for 10 years. So pretty much where you're at today is perfect. And if you feel you'd like more structure, systems or support, reach out to some people who can help you, but don't beat yourself up because you're not at the level of someone who's been doing it for a while, because this is a business where experience does matter. It does matter.
What's one thing that is not completely obvious about you that you wish more people would get?
It's okay to be the unique person that you are. It's okay to be yourself. See, social media doesn't reflect the real world. People put out there what it is they want the world to see. So people get a perception and they often come in and they say, "Ooh, you're really different to how we thought you'd be." And so what's not obvious, perhaps because of things that people say out there, you build a reputation and you've never met the people, which is what's not obvious, that I am just me trying to be a good person one day at a time, one conversation at a time, one person at a time. So I start the day, every single day, I begin again. And that piece is probably not obvious if you don't work in here and you're not working with the fact that I'm riddled with flaws. I often don't know what it is I'm doing, but there's a whole bunch of people around me that are helping me to clean myself up when I mess up. I think perhaps that's not obvious if you're not working in here. I'm as human as everybody else. And I tell you what, if I can do this, anybody else can do this too. It's just how much they want to do it and how happy they are to say, hey, this is just me. This is just me.
I think your honesty there is completely inspirational, which is one of the reasons that you'll be speaking at ARIC 2018. So give us a little bit of an insight as to what message you're going to be delivering there.
So Tom Penos gave me the topics that he would like me to speak around. And really the specific topics were, how do you become a million-dollar writer? Then how do you transition from being a million-dollar writer to a $2 million writer? And what I believe is that loads of people will get up on the stage and show the tactics, the tools and the skills of how they're doing it in their own unique ways. I am very lucky. I sit in a spot where I'm seeing lots of people transition from being a $500,000 writer up, et cetera. So I can talk about those skill-based pieces, but I won't. I'm going to talk about the commonalities I see of the people, what they have to do inside their business and also as people to not only achieve that success, but how to build consistency so that it's enduring for them over time. And in addition to that, how they keep balance in their lives, that you can achieve that financial success. But if the price you pay is your family or your marriage, then what's the point? So I'm actually going to talk about the anatomy of a person with ambition, how they get from A to B, then how they move from B to C, and then how they endure, how they stay there. But what it is that I see the people do to hold themselves there, and there's many secrets and commonalities there, which I'll share from what it is that I see. But I'm also going to show the other side, which is the pathology of how people go out of alignment. So it's very much around the ego-based piece. It's around fear, and it's around things that happen when people get success and how I see them go off track. And so I want to share those with people because I see that, and we see that across the industry. You see some super people become superstars, and then they become megastars, and then they blow up. And it doesn't need to be that way. So I really feel that as part of being a guide to the people who work with me, we help them to go up to achieve that level of success. And it's to help them stay the really good person they are as they're achieving that success, because, you know, what goes up comes down. And I see many people come down, and it doesn't need to be that way.
So it is possible to be a good writer and also to have a life.
Absolutely. They're around you all the time. You are interviewing them for your beautiful publication every day of the week. So it is there. But there's also this hidden self. I see the hidden self with people, which is the vulnerabilities, the price they pay, some of the things where if it was talked about, not talking about people, but talked about, perhaps we could help one or two people who are on their journey to achieve their ambition, to put some structures and some supports in place, not around the real estate piece, but around the piece of themselves as people, so that they don't necessarily have the trip ups that some other people have. I just see people feel ashamed about some of those things that happened. And if we helped them and talked about it, it doesn't necessarily have to happen to them. They don't have to have breakdowns. They don't have to go and take substances as support to stay there. You can actually build a blissful business and career that endures without taking any form of substance or support, and keep your marriage and keep your connection with your kids, and also be a nice human being as well. I see it, because I see it with your people and our people.
For sure. So let's go back to you. What are your goals for the next 12 months, and where do you see things in the property industry heading in the next 12 months?
The goals for Ray White Remuera is very much focused on insurance. We've done great and we're so proud, but we have got 20% growth in our business plan, and the growth does not relate to new salespeople. The growth is from people within the company. We've done a lot of work inside their businesses, so we have an ambitious growth plan. Our people, they're quite capable of it. We've invested in their skills, we've invested in their teams, and so they're ready for that growth. And so I'm looking forward to supporting them, and we are doing it now. Auckland and New Zealand has gone through a changing market. We're at the top of our cycle, and we're at what I see or describe as a normal market. We've had equilibrium between buyers and sellers, and we're in our summer selling season at the moment, so buyers have got a bit of choice. So our focus is very much on doing the basics well for our buyers and sellers, and to help get the meeting of the minds. Probably the adjustment is on the vendor side more than on the buyer side, because there's a bit of choice at the moment because it is summer and we've got quite a bit of stock. And so it's doing the basics well and having really consistent communications with our clients as we help them move towards a sale. So it really is a year of doing the basics well, and from that will come growth, because there's a lot of people in this market that haven't made the adjustments. They're hoping that advertising will attract a buyer and do the work for them. That market is gone in Auckland. This is an opportune time for order winners, and fortunately I work with order winners, and so there's a series of adjustments because the market's always adjusting, and markets are people. People are buyers, so it's working closely with buyers to help serve them and support them as they're making buyer decisions and working for the vendor, giving them fantastic information on a daily basis as to what is happening to help move them towards a sale based on really relevant information. And that is from sales that are occurring on a daily basis. It's from any nuances happening in our marketplace to help them make a very good decision on the day. So good old-fashioned real estate is what we're doing to get the growth.
Absolutely. Consistency and focusing on the other person always wins out, I feel, based on everything I've heard from the people I've interviewed and certainly from you today.
You know, that is our business, just serving people really well and not cutting corners, because through that boom, there was so much corner cutting that went on. People really thought that the market was them, but it was the market driving the growth. And I tell you what, the interesting thing is when the market comes back down, the salespeople don't necessarily say that it's them. They funnily enough say that it's the market.
So what is the most important thing you're working on right now and how are you making that happen?
We're very focused on our culture, and we always will be, but it's a culture of inclusion versus a culture of isolation. Now, with the changing market that we have, people tend to go into their offices, they're dealing with change and they're dealing with it in their office and within the team. So we are opening the communication pathways. We're getting everybody out from the individual offices because they're all going through the same things, and we don't want them to be in isolation as they're going through the adjustments of the market that are going on. So we're pulling people into pod groups, into team groups, into open. We've changed our sales meeting completely so that we're talking about scripts and dialogues for what it is that's happening with everything that we're experiencing on a day-to-day market. So really opening up the communication internally. But then because that is working so nicely, we're taking what it is that we're discussing and we're turning it out externally to the marketplace, and we're getting some very good commentary of benefit to buyers and sellers in the marketplace about what it is that we're seeing from the coalface. And they're really appreciative of what it is that we're seeing, the nuances on a daily basis from the coalface. But the neat thing is, because we're all talking together as opposed to in isolation, we've got an aligned and consistent message going out to the marketplace, and the market really appreciates that. So everyone's sharing their ideas, and that's the piece that we're focused on, because as we go through change, rather than hiding and being alone, we come together and we support each other with the changes that are going on. And then it's not so scary.
What lessons have you learned over your life now that you would write in a letter to your teenage self?
Okay, so that's around 30 years ago now, so it is some time ago, and wow, it goes fast. That's the first thing I need to say, is so don't waste a minute. And what I wish I'd known, and I tell myself all the time, is everything is as it should be. And so it's a mantra that I use throughout the day, because I was always living in the past or living in the future, never in the now. So I tell myself throughout the day today, everything is as it should be, and I actually trust the process of what's going on. So sometimes I'm breathing through the minutes because I find it quite stressful, but I wished I'd known to my teenage self that everything is as it should have been at that point in time, because for the experience level I had in my life, it was all okay. I wished I'd known that I could create my own environment, and creating my own environment was finding people out there. You know, it might be in my home life or it might be wherever I was working. Those people weren't the right people for me. And so you can create your own environment. You can go and find good people, and from good people, or from the environment, you can just take the good lessons out. You don't have to just think, well, this is my lot. And so you can look for people who you admire and reach out to them. You don't have to be scared. What I found is the more I've reached out, people are so helpful. So don't be scared to reach out. And when you do reach out, people are horrid. My experience is that karma usually sorts them out anyway. The other thing is that I wished I'd learned to look in the mirror and not look out the window. By looking in the mirror, what's getting in the way of me being my best self? Not comparing myself to someone else or using excuses that if I had this, my life would look like that. So I've learned to look in the mirror. And honestly, as I look in the mirror, I'm just a lifetime project. I'm so flawed, but I'm committed to working on the flaws for myself every day, one tiny little flaw at a time. And I wish I knew those things. They just helped me today, and I wished I'd known them sooner.
It's interesting. I look back now and I think, geez, I was in such a rush to fix everything. Why was I in such a rush? Because these things, they do tend to iron themselves out over time.
Well, they do, but also some of the things, they're not of your doing, they're of the parenting or your upbringing or your environment. And so it's not that that's your lot, it's that, hey, that's the way that it was. Well, what are other ways that we can do this? And you get to know people and you can see that's one of the great joys of being in here is I see kids come in here, they've got bits of their upbringing that they don't like and they're picking it up from good role models within the business. So that's actually one of the joys I get is seeing kids come through and they say to me, Megan, I don't want to take this bit from my upbringing into my future, into my family, into my marriage. And then they've got people who are good role models in here who are helping to teach them how to get that bit right for them.
What do you think is a great company that nobody has started yet?
It would be a company that takes principles and mentors them to become effective leaders, because there is no company in our industry currently that takes all principles and says, hey, let me take you on your journey. Let me guide you. Let me show you the way. There are fantastic people providing some form of principle training, but not being on the journey with them. There are coaches who are there for people. But I tell you what, if you've got a whole bunch of people together, as principals and said, hey, in around leadership, we need to step up, and we actually pulled people together and it was an expectation as opposed to something that people wanted to do. I believe that right there is the opportunity to take us to a whole new level. So the mentoring of principals to be effective leaders, there's a huge gap in the market for that. And I think that that is starting to be filled. But all the principals I know, they want to be better. They just need to know where to go. So I think that'd be a great business.
We need a real estate MBA or something like that.
A real estate MBA.
There we go. It's one to put on the whiteboard, I think.
Now you're talking. So there we are, real estate MBA. That'd be fantastic.
Megan, what is your why?
I get up every day and all I want to do is to help and support people to reach their true potential, because I have never met a person who doesn't have more inside, more growth, more to give, and it's just helping unlock that. So it's just supporting them as we help unlock the potential that's inside each and every person, be they a salesperson, administrator, many of our clients, everybody, every single one of us has got so much potential, and it's how we can help untap and unlock that potential. That's what I'm committed to helping every person that comes my way.
Absolutely. Megan, it's been wonderful talking to you today. You've given us so much in terms of inspirational content and your experiences in leadership that I'm sure that everybody is going to learn a lot out of this podcast. Do you have any final words of advice or a quote that you absolutely live by?
Well, everyone's got the quotes, but what I'd like to say is that people make a company great. A company doesn't make great people. So I would like to give this whole podcast, all this information, back to the people inside our company who inspire and challenge me every single day. Without those guys, I certainly wouldn't be having this chat with you. It's their belief in me, my belief in them, that's creating this wonderful coalition that's building of people getting better together. So I just want to thank the guys within the team for trusting me, and I'm just looking forward to growing and evolving with them and the broader real estate community. Thank you.
Amazing. Megan Jaffe, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.